Alaska's native communities have lived in the coastal regions of the Alaskan Panhandle for many generations. Water has shaped their lives in every way. Stories heard and totem poles seen each describe the history and life of the Tlingit people. Today's segment is part of the series titled Water is a Many Splendid Thing. Hello, I'm Steve Baker. This is Living Water. I was fortunate to meet with a Tlingit master woodcarver, Israel Shotridge, and the Tlingit tribal cultural spokesperson, Irene Dundas, in Ketchikan, Alaska. Israel explained that the Tlingit people are a matrilineal culture. His woodcarving has included many things during the last 27 years, including canoes.
I am born and raised here in Ketchikan. I am of the Tlingit tribal group, original settlers here in Ketchikan called the Tongass tribe, were Tlingits. And the name of my tribe is Takwaydee. I'm from the Brown Bear House, pronounced Hoots Hit, Hit for House. And we're, our culture is matrilineal, so I follow my mother, and all lineage passed through my mother. So all my brothers and sisters are from Brown Bear House. I'm been carving here in Ketchikan, totem pole, 27 years. I apprenticed with a master totem carver here in Ketchikan. And we made many things from old growth red cedar trees. In fact, canoes are a modem of travel. Many ocean-going canoes all the way down from here in southeast all the way to the Puget Sound area, Washington State. We traded up and down the coast in these canoes. Canoes is a means of transportation.
Surprisingly, Southeast Alaska's panhandle is not the Arctic freezer that some of us imagine. The Ketchikan area weather is a lot like Seattle, Washington. They receive up to 16 feet of rain each year and surprisingly have mild winters. Whenever several feet of snow does fall in the wintertime, it usually rains just after and melts the snow away. Tlingit native Irene Dundas shares what home life must have been like for her people in the years past.
Quonset was their main village. That was their winter camp. That's where you would see all the big cedar houses with the tribal houses with their clan designs out in front. Those would all be kind of perched right up on the coast, on the beach line. And the people would stay in their winter villages all winter, usually from about October to spring. And then they would leave to their summer camps, which usually it would be the camp that their grandparents had owned, and it was usually right next to a salmon stream. And then they would go and get all the salmon that they needed. They would dry it, they would smoke it, they would preserve it in oil, they'd pick berries there, they would also gather all the medicines that they needed for throughout the winter and throughout the year. So about springtime, they would leave in their canoes and just take their basics. They wouldn't construct any big houses. They would be like little forts or little tent forts that they would use in these summer camps, and they would go by canoe.
Fishing in coastal and sea waters required special preparation that promoted success in catching food for not only the fishermen's immediate family, but also for their extended family.
The men would believe that they would have to be pure. They would stay away from eating certain types of foods. And they would do this for a couple weeks. They would sometimes prepare themselves by drinking salt water for a period of time, like the salt water from the sea, up to 2 weeks. They would drink salt water, and they believed that it would cleanse their body, because it was a pretty serious deal to go out and get salmon and to get their subsistence food. So they would stay away from having sex with their wives, and they would stay away from eating clams, like anything crustaceans from the rocks, clams, gumboots, seaweed, things like that. They would stay away from eating during that period of time where they had to prepare to go get food.
Irene recently attended a University of Alaska field trip with the U.S. Forest Service. The field trip was designed to monitor coastal areas where the ancient Tlingit people assembled to catch salmon. When fishing near home, families would go from one stream to another, collecting as much salmon as possible, sometimes for the entire day. Irene was amazed how her ancestors had built the rocks up in the river to block the salmon from escaping.
The first thing you could see is all these rock mounds that collect The salmon stream is like 50 feet away from these big rock pits. And I was thinking, how in the heck did they do this? Because you're talking like boulders that it would take three people to lift or four people to lift. And these pits could be somewhere up to maybe 300 feet by 300 feet. So those people would have literally had to have picked up all these rocks individually that's on the beach shore right next to the salmon creek. And they would have to literally stack them on top of each other to be enough height so where the salmon did not go over the rocks. Because as the tide comes in and goes out, the salmon would get stuck in these mounds. So the women and the teenagers and children would, or even the men, can come down and get a spear and then spear the salmon right in the water. So they would have to literally be on the beach constantly all day doing this, trying to move these rocks. And it wasn't like hundreds of people went out to these fish camps. It was just immediate family, maybe some aunts and uncles. There were a few people here and there. So it wasn't like there was hundreds of people moving all these rocks to make these mounds, fish traps alongside the beach. It was quite an effort.
The Tlingit people place respect as a primary attribute that family members exercise in their daily lives. This respect is not only with one another, but also with the animals and land that surround them. After saying goodbye to Irene and Israel, I left Ketchikan by boat. This was another reminder that the Tlingit people also extend their respect and appreciation to the water that surrounds them, fortifies them, and moves them to places that until recently could not be reached without the many rivers, seas, and lakes spread across the majestic Pacific Northwest. Fundamental to our lives and environment, I'm Steve Baker. This is Living Water.